Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is our weekly Hoops HD report.
Can you hear me okay? I want to make sure everyone hears my ingenious knowledge tonight. Can you hear me okay? Oh, have we started?
I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. We got Joby Fortson and Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org up here on the top row. John Titel on the second row. And John, I'm sorry, I have to put you next to the puppet somehow. You ended up on the same line as him. He's already become a disruption. There is some button here where I could throw him over the podcast. I may try to find that before we get done with the show.
Why would you want to do that?
This is a show where we review all the news and notes going on in college basketball. We go through all the games. We go through anything else we feel like discussing. But we got a lot to get to here. There were, in some conferences, a lot of games played this week. There is, in some conferences, a lot of important games coming up next week, this next week. In other conferences, there may not be as many, and I'm sure a lot of the games we're going to be looking at that are scheduled to get played will, of course, be canceled. But, however, with all that said, yes, David?
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, a lot of important games have been canceled, and we're going to talk about all of those.
I'm going to bring up the standings here, and if this works in a second or two, we should see the Big East standings on the screen. If it doesn't work, then we'll just talk about them at random anyhow. But the Big East, we had – I want to start in the Big East because we had a day yesterday, Sunday – four games that were scheduled, three of the which were just absolutely amazing games, two overtime games and a buzzer beater. Unfortunately, our colleague John Slica cannot be in here with us because I wanted to talk to him about the Xavier game. But David, let me start with you actually then. The story behind the Xavier Marquette game, which was absolutely amazing.
Well, benefiting from, you know, the blanket waiver for transfers, Xavier got, is it Kunkel? I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the name here.
Yeah, it's Kunkel.
Yeah, Kunkel. Okay, thank you. Got him eligible. I know I'm just bad with names. I don't know. That people say I drank too much or something, but I just can't remember. But anyway, Kunkel, after being denied a waiver and denied the appeal, and pretty much when you're denied your appeal, you're not playing anywhere, gets relief because of the blanket waiver that the NCAA granted and came off the bench, played 17 minutes, not a lot of minutes, but did pretty well when he was out there, scored 22 points. This guy was just a shooting machine. And Xavier, he wasn't the only one. Like, Xavier on offense looked really good, but, you know, Marquette hung in there. Marquette came into the game having won two games against top 10 teams. So this was a battle. Both teams battled. And it looked like while Xavier led most of the way, you wouldn't say that they ever had him at arm's length. Like, Marquette was right in there. And on their final possession, down four, Marquette hits a three, gets fouled, and hits the free throw. And you're like, my God, Xavier has blown it. John Stalika's head's exploding. We're going in the overtime. Marquette has the momentum. And did they drive the basket in? I think they got a shot blocked or something, and it just wound up in Kunkel's hands a second to go, drain the three, game over. Xavier remains undefeated. I'm assuming they're into the rankings now. Yeah, there they are at 22 on the screen. They deserve it. And, I mean, judging by how they looked in the first couple games as opposed to how they've looked in the last few, especially in their last one, Steele done an incredible job. This is a really good team. They're ranked in the top 25, and they should be.
All right. We've got you see there's rankings up on the end of the screen, by the way. We've got lots of ratings here. Joby, your J&G ratings, there is a problem with them tonight. None of them are showing up properly,
okay.
Which I actually have to blame David for in part because of the fact that the seed list was placed above the regular J&G ratings on the J&G page. Which I blame David for, even if he didn't do that. That's what messed things up.
How the hell is it my fault?
I will get that corrected, but please ignore those ratings. If you want to get teams J&G ratings, we'll try to update with them as we go on. Otherwise, I will get them fixed.
They are on the website, I have, and you can blame me. I am putting the seed list first.
Yeah, don't blame me.
I'm blaming David.
Bracket matrix would like so.
Okay. We will get it fixed though. We don't have to fix the page. I will get it fixed by time of our next show. Actually, by Wednesday night show. So please ignore those numbers you're seeing on the screen right now, for the time being. But let's talk about a few other teams here. Tytel, let me go to you. We just, as we started this show, we just saw Butler lose at home to Southern Illinois after also losing to Indiana, after also getting blown out by Villanova. Not a good week for the Bulldogs.
Horrible season. I mean, this is a team, you remember last year, 12-1 in non-conference play. The only loss was a one-point loss at Baylor. They were this close to perfection. This year, they've fallen back to earth. It's no shame, I guess, to lose to an undefeated team like SIU, but to do so at home when you're down 18 and make this comeback that falls short is brutal. No time to relax either. Back-to-back games with Providence the next two Wednesdays. Good news, they're a good long-range shooting team, 39% behind the arc. Bad news, they're getting killed behind the arc from the other team. They're allowing 46% three-point shooting. Their free throw shooting is terrible, only 60%, which is why they're going to lose a lot of close games. Can't blame the lack of success on experience, though. Three of their top four scorers are seniors. Jair Bolden, Aaron Thompson, Bryce Enzi. I don't know what they're doing, but they got to fix it soon. Otherwise, you can just throw in the towel on this season.
Yeah, not good. Well, Rocco, maybe we should go to somebody that maybe did look good. I guess we should talk a little bit about Villanova, a couple of blowout wins this week.
Talk about Providence before we're done, but yes, go ahead.
No, we're not talking about Providence.
Not yet, but we will because they look good.
Yeah, Villanova, really no sweat with Butler or St. Joe's over the last week. We talked about them a little last week. You know, I think they're not the type of team when they're playing against tournament caliber competition to really blow teams out, but the fact that they're blowing out teams like Butler and St. Joe's is a good sign. You know, just an abundance of talent, great cohesiveness in the Villanova offense. Really impressive, the road win at Texas a couple weeks ago. So still the team to beat. I also observed in the conference this week, as David hinted at, Providence, beautiful three-point winner by A.J. Reeves in the corner in overtime to win at Seton Hall. Two teams that are really likable, I think, you know, being a non-biased West Coast guy. I know there's a lot of tight borders out there. But, man, so fun to watch Mamu play for Seton Hall. Has he really just taken a giant step forward this year after being in the shadows of Powell in the past year or two? I mean, the guy can do it all, Mamu. And Providence didn't look good at all, I thought, in Maui at the mainland. Now already starting to make those adjustments that Coach Cooley is known for. I feel like they'll just continue to get better as the season goes on. A win like this just catapults them up to a new level of confidence. So kudos to them for getting that win, but two really fun teams to watch.
Joby, I want to share one other team. UConn kind of had the game won against Creighton.
Yes.
Blew it at the end there. But now Creighton, a nice road win at UConn, along with a road win at St. John's this week, and up to 13th of the nation.
Yeah, now that Creighton, we had kind of forgotten about Creighton because they lost, not embarrassingly, but to a good slate of teams. And now, you know, this is the benefit when you play a tough schedule. Now you have if you win some of those games, the ones you lost don't look as bad. And in this case, winning UConn is going to hold a lot of value down the stretch. And right now, you know, you say on the J&J, I figured out what it is. Those are the seeds,
yep,
you know, for the lower teams that those teams would have. So right now, Creighton is a 5 seed. They have nothing to do but go up because you have such strength in the Big East. Like UConn, like Providence, like Villanova, like Xavier. So, you know, Creighton has the world in front of them. They have survived it and can go forward and expand their resume.
Well, we have a slate of 5 games coming up on Wednesday.
Chad, I just wanted to say that I am texting our colleague Lee Delvecchio to tell him that we are talking about how UConn lost.
UConn does not currently have a game scheduled for this week. Who knows if that'll change. The Xavier Creighton game, I think, is a fascinating game. The Villanova road game at Marquette. But Tytel, I got to throw it out to you. DePaul, one of only about 15 teams left in the nation that intend to play at some point this season that still has not yet played, allegedly finally taking the court Wednesday against Western Illinois.
Can't wait. I've literally waited all month to see this team play.
Jeez. Yeah. DePaul, you know, been shut down, I think, 3 times already. We'll see if they finally get some play in here. There's only a very small handful of teams left, other than ones like the Patriot League teams that don't intend to play non-conference at all that haven't played. But Let's move right on along to the Big Ten Conference, where had a pretty darn good week. If you look at some of these ratings, a 14-team conference, and if you look at the two columns there in the polls, only three teams, Nebraska, Maryland, Penn State, did not at least get votes in the polls. And, of course, we got to highlight the team at number one there, 2-0 in the conference, ranked in the top 12 in both polls. The Rutgers Scarlet Knights, Rocco, now 2-0 off of a win over an Illinois team that kind of had it looked like it was Illinois' game in the first half, but Rutgers made the adjustments and had a great second half, and it wasn't even as close as that 3-point final.
Yeah, just an outstanding second half, as you mentioned. I thought Ron Harper Jr. asserted himself as a all Big Ten caliber player. He has all year, but last night, wow, he really carried the team. 28 points, 9 boards. And I think, what you're seeing out of this Rutgers team is that next step. Last year, the biggest problem, of course, was winning away from home. Earlier last week, they went to Maryland, one of the mini teams they lost to on the road last year, went out and beat them by 14. It was like another day at the office. Obviously, winning on the road this year, a little easier than last year because there is no fans. But still, it's a process to travel, get tested, get out there, play the game. It's not like Maryland is, Fairleigh Dickinson or anything. So this Rutgers team just seems to have another level of attitude this year. And Ron Harper Jr. is calling it a dog mentality. Really fun team to watch. Chad, you must be in heaven right now. This is probably the climax of Rutgers basketball in our lives.
I've never seen anything like this. The team looks so good. I think the key even more than Harper, though, is Miles Johnson is just – become a monster down low for this team. And, I don't even know if Geo Baker's going to be the starting point guard at this point, because Mulcahy has been so darn good. And Baker is comfortable being the sixth man off the bench. And they've got, there is some depth on this team now. There is talent here. It's a Rutgers team unlike I've ever seen before.
It's an amazing problem to have. You'll take that any day. Right.
I just want normalcy back. Like, I want crowds back. I want to be able to go to bars and restaurants. I don't want to have to wear a mask. And I want Rutgers to be terrible again.
Where's the buzzer? Where's the buzzer? Titel, let me head over to you. A couple of teams we want to discuss here. How about the team that's in second place here? How about the Wolverines?
First of all, I'm getting you a buzzer for Christmas, so get ready for that. Thank you. Yeah, the Wolverines, they didn't even play last week. You get to sit back and enjoy your 6-0 record. It's a nice problem to have. They're going to get into the holiday mood this month. Nebraska for Christmas, Maryland for New Year's Eve. So they're jumping right in. Great interior scoring, 60% inside the arc. Somehow succeeding despite opponents making 80% of their free throws. They start three seniors, so lots of experience. But their best player, 7-1 freshman center Hunter Dickinson. You heard Rocco just mention Hunter's cousins, Fairleigh Dickinson. Hunter's leading the way, 16.7 boards, 2 blocks a game. They have another big senior, their transfer, Chandi Brown. Starter at Wake Forest, instant offense off the bench for Michigan. 10 points a game. He only plays half the game, 21 minutes.
Joby, we got lots of teams to talk about. But I did not think the team we'd talk about tonight would be Northwestern. Yes. But what the hell happened yesterday?
You know what? And it's not like Northwestern. Yes, Northwestern is 4-1. I point you to the type of teams they're beating to get to that 4-1 with Quincy up at the top of our deal. So, wow, how in the world did that happen? Especially against earlier in the day after Iowa, which we'll talk about later, had lost, goes, well, maybe Michigan State might be the best team in the conference. Wow, that thought ended quite quickly. And Northwestern, I think this is one of those games. I'd like to think the Wildcats and Collins are putting something really great together. I need more. Yes. The Michigan State, is outstanding, and that makes that 4-1 record look nice and dandy. But let's see what happens down the – I could still see this team wind up below 500 at the end of the day and not making the dance. But enjoy the moment while it's happening. I still predict the Spartans will be ahead of the Wildcats when the season is all said and done in the Big Ten standings.
I think that's a good assumption. But David, if Iowa I think Iowa may still be the best team, but if it's not Iowa and it's not the Spartans, how about this Wisconsin team and what they did to Louisville?
What they did to Louisville was criminal. You just don't do that to people and get away with it. But I actually still like this Wisconsin team. They're my favorite team in the conference. They've been that since the beginning. As good as it is, and as good as I think Rutgers is, and as great as that story is, but my God, Whiskey just dismantled Louisville. Now, Louisville had been shut down, and that probably – not only are you not seeing live games, you're not practicing either. I mean, it really can throw you for a loop when your program gets shut down. But from all accounts, Louisville just never really started it back up. They were down 20 before the game even tipped off. What was it, 34-8 or something at one point? Wisconsin just obliterated them.
And one other game I want to mention here, Rocco, this Ohio State team. Now, it technically was a neutral court win over UCLA. The game was in Cleveland. UCLA had to travel cross country for it. But they do pick up the win against what we thought was a pretty good UCLA team.
Yeah, they did. It was a great game. Ohio State just took it away in the last couple minutes, but it was seesaw for the first 35 minutes or so. I was pretty surprised because, you know, two games before, they were missing EJ Liddell, and they also Towns was questionable, but he got in the game a little bit but wasn't able to keep going. He only played a couple minutes. So I was just impressed. I mean, Holtman is just a tremendous coach, and so is Cronin. So it was a fun coaching matchup for me. I thought Ohio State just demonstrated that they've got a lot of toughness, and they're going to need it in this Big Ten. You know, it's going to be another one of those cases, whether it's Ohio State or not, they may be good enough to run away with a bid, but there's going to be a couple teams like we saw last year. It was down to the wire. We didn't end up seeing the selection show, but there's going to be a maximum amount of losses you can take in this league until the committee just has to throw you off the board. And so we'll see what happens when we see that battle for like 9th and 10th place, but all these little wins, they're going to add up big time at the end of the year.
I've got the upcoming schedule for the week coming up here. Wednesday night, Rutgers at Ohio State is suddenly a huge game. And David, Christmas Day, Friday.
Yeah.
We've got a quadruple header of Big Ten games ending with the Wisconsin-Michigan State game.
Yeah,
that was somewhere in there. I don't know if it's ending. I don't know the schedule.
Iowa at Minnesota is interesting, and normally that would be a game where many would be rocking if fans were let in. Like, they just had a pretty good win themselves this past week, which was really, I thought, prior to that, they were while they had a bloated record, they'd pretty much been unchallenged, but looking really good their last time out. So I'm kind of looking forward to that one. I think Iowa wins it, but if many – beats them, obviously, but just plays well, then suddenly we need to start looking at them too.
Yeah, Minnie then hosts Michigan State next Monday night, so it's something else to circle there too with that Minnesota team. But let's keep moving here. And if the Big Ten maybe is not – if there's any argument that the Big Ten is not the best conference in the nation, Joby, I think the argument talks about at least the top of the Big 12 conference with now – four of the top 10 teams in the nation in this league.
Yeah, and Kansas has really turned it on. Mm-hmm. Texas is looking strong, West Virginia, but it all starts at the very top. This night, it's not on our board, but don't worry, Baylor won't be losing last time.
it is going final 99-42.
Yeah.
Pine Bluff tonight, yes.
The Baylor Bears – right now, and we'll talk about the other one when we do the West Coast Conference, but I truly do believe two teams have jumped way out in front of everybody else at this early stage of the season, and it's not a shock because we had those two teams at the front of the pack to start the season. Baylor is real. Baylor is ruthless. What a shame not having that game against Gonzaga.
We hope.
Yeah. Well, there's going to be another top challenge. Gonzaga will be traveling to Texas to play another team from the East Coast. So figure that out. They'll be nationally televised this weekend. But Baylor is the real deal, and they won't go undefeated, obviously, because the Big 12 is so tough at the top. But give Baylor a lot of credit for what they've done against a pretty good group of games and a good schedule. And I look forward to seeing those Baylor, Texas games and those Baylor, West Virginia and Baylor, Kansas. Kansas, your run is completely over after this season.
It is worth – oh, go ahead.
David, I actually want to ask you about the next team along – about that Kansas team, in fact, who's now number three or number four in the nation. And that game they had Thursday night, especially against Texas Tech, which has become an incredible series in the last couple of years now.
Yeah, it has. And it seems you kind of get the feeling when you look at Texas Tech, well, I mean, they've basically just won home bye games. Best win is Abilene Christian. But what we saw the other night against Kansas is that they're as good as anybody in the league. I think that even though it was the opener, that had major first place implications because those are two of the best teams. It went down to the wire. They had a shot in the final possession to win the game. And if it happens, suddenly they're also ranked in the top 10. And we're talking about how they're conference favorites and front runners, right? You know, right up there with Baylor and how Kansas is playing catch up. So I don't know if there's any such thing as a pivotal first game, but if there was, that was it. This Texas Tech team, they're going to get the opportunities that they need, and they're going to take advantage of them sooner or later, and probably sooner. They're going to be a protected seed, and they still might win the – I don't know if they'll finish first, but they'll be right in the mix.
They let that game slip away. Oh.
Yeah, they did, and what a good game. I mean, it was just
– give Kansas all the credit, but you're right, David. Texas Tech had the opportunities – and probably should have won that game, but give Kansas credit for winning a hell of a road game.
Yeah, and it took them a minute to get their motors started. I think when you watch their season opener against Houston, you're like, somebody poked this team with a stick, one of Chad's favorite expressions that I borrow all the time. But since then, they've really come alive, and they were certainly alive.
David makes up expressions that I say all the time. The Texas Longhorns.
You said it once. I say it all the time. The
Texas Longhorns yesterday had a very nice win as well against an Oklahoma State team that had been playing really, really well up until that game.
The 3-point home win. I don't know how nice it is, but the thing that Rocco said earlier is that Villanova, one of their key wins was beating Texas. I couldn't agree more. I think that's going to help both of their resumes. Super quality win for Villanova, Tier 1. But for Texas, it's certainly a good loss when you lose by four to a team like Villanova. They're off this week. They get a home cupcake next week. They're starting off the new year right. They go to Kansas on January 2nd. Great perimeter defense. They only allow four threes a game. And freshman forward Greg Brown, McDonald's All-American, he only had seven against Villanova. Since then, he's been great at everything. 15 points, 9 boards, 3 blocks a game in the 3 games since then. But it's also with the backcourt. Matt Coleman, Courtney Ramey, Andrew Jones, starting backcourt, each of them scoring in double digits. So great balance of big men and the guards.
Rocco, last week, Kansas State lost a home game to non-D1 Fort Hays State. Then on Tuesday, bounced back and went to Iowa State and won on the road there, which makes you think even Iowa State's now the worst team in the conference. Then Iowa State on Friday had West Virginia most of the game. Is there a problem with West Virginia, or is this conference just insane?
Maybe a little bit of both. I don't think there's a lot of flaws with West Virginia, but at the same time, you know, their style of play in some cases based on the matchup doesn't warrant a blowout. We saw them mess around with North Texas too. And then they finally pulled away for like a 13-point win, but they were letting them hang around way too long. Iowa State, they've got a mismatch, you know, a mashup of different transfers and JUCO guys. And it's not like they're not talented guys. So there's going to be some nights where the Cyclones play well. I thought, and you know, Rasir Bolden's a great player, came over from Penn State. He played phenomenally in Morgantown. And I thought it was a little bit criminal, some of the calls that went against the Cyclones there in the last minute. Even the replays, I thought a couple of them showed that it should have been their ball, and they ended up going to the Mountaineers instead. But we're not here to talk bad about the officials. It's just unfortunate for a Cyclone team that needed a boost.
They get Chicago State tomorrow night. Don't worry. Don't worry.
unfortunately,
oh, that got
scratched.
Forget it. How about the other game tomorrow night?
Yeah, I was going to mention I think we got to give TCU a shout out. They went to Oklahoma State, knocked off undefeated Oklahoma State. Great win for Jamie Dixon. They've got two guys, Kevin Samuel and Mike Miles, the freshman. Miles might be obviously Cade Cunningham's freshman of the year in the league, but Miles is right there. He's having an incredible freshman campaign, and Samuel can score with anybody. I think this TCU team is going to give some teams fits.
A couple of interesting games tomorrow. Obviously, West Virginia, Kansas, a top seven matchup. Nationally, it's going to be the game to circle. Also, though, you know, don't overlook this Texas Tech Oklahoma game. This might be Oklahoma's first big chance to make a statement win as well, David.
Yeah, it is, and it's important for Texas Tech because to date, that would be their biggest win of the year so far. So they certainly don't want to just mail that in either. Like, they got to get that win.
Joby, going to jump over to your conference now. You're an ACC guy. Let's go there. We had a couple of close games tonight that shouldn't have been close, although Florida State ended up winning, not on the screen. Virginia Tech struggled with Longwood, of all teams, but ended up pulling away late and blowing them out in the second half. But, you know, when we look at what happened this past week in this conference, I guess maybe we just start with Carolina and what they did to a pretty, well, maybe a lousy Kentucky team for all we know at this point.
Yeah, Carolina was, keeps holding the flag up, which is unusual. They usually do very poor out of conference, and then win a bunch of ACC games. And they kind of held that serve in the, in the Big Ten Challenge and other places. Carolina has the depth inside that Roy Williams likes. He likes transition. He likes guys who can run with big, long, tall bodies. He's got that right now. This Carolina team is a solid team. It is not, I would be very surprised if they win the ACC at the end of the day, but they're certainly a tournament team. Leaky Black and Brooks. Yeah, they're definitely solid, but I don't think they're going to be adding to their banners in the Dean Dome.
Rocco, Florida State, as I mentioned already, struggled with Gardner Webb tonight, although it looks a little lot more of a blowout than it even was, after coming off a loss at home to UCF over the weekend.
Right, yeah. Seminoles really kind of puttering along after I felt like they were okay. You know, you could think about go back to the Keontae Johnson game when they played well and closed that out. Florida was obviously out of it mentally after that happened. But I thought maybe that would have an emotional effect on Florida State, but they did beat Georgia Tech right after that pretty handily. UCF just took it to them over the weekend. We'll talk about them soon. But, yeah, I'm not sure what's going on there because Florida State was if you rewind to this show last week, they were the biggest thing we had as a sure thing in the ACC. Now they've looked the shakiest in the last week. So it's – and Clemson coming up next week. So it'll be really interesting.
Tytel, Pitt picked up a road win. I know you want to talk a little Panthers here?
It's talk about turning your season around. I think they had arguably the worst loss of any team in the nation so far this year. Opening night, 10-point home loss to St. Francis, PA.
This Kansas State would differ with you, but go ahead.
St. Francis has gone 0-4 since then with four losses by 15 or more points. All Pitt's done was bounce back. Five straight wins, including at Northwestern, which is looking great, and at Miami. Very young team, two juniors and three sophomores among the starting five. Sophomore guard Justin Champagne, double-double machine, 18 points, 12 boards a game. The bad news, on Saturday, the school announced Coach Capel is going to be out on Tuesday for their game versus Louisville. He tested positive. Hopefully he'll be healthy next week by the time he heads to his alma mater to play at Duke on the 29th.
Yeah, David, there's the upcoming games on the schedule, and I think we've got a circle Saturday. It's been moved to a 1 p.m. instead of a noon start, but coming up Saturday. Yeah, Virginia Gonzaga, but how about the other game?
Yeah, it's the Saturday after Christmas. They're sticking true to that date. I don't know. It's going to be a different feel. It's one of the more bitter rivalries in college basketball. You know, there's certainly others that are on that list, but this is definitely on the list. It seemed like until a few years ago, it was always just this unwatchable rock fight. But the last few years, the games have been really good. Kentucky's won them all. I don't think they're going to win this one, but like true to the rivalry, as angry and as upset as Kentucky fans are right now, if they get that win at Louisville, everything will be forgiven, and nothing, they won't remember anything that happened before that, and it's sort of a big opportunity for them. But interesting storyline this year amongst COVID and just
right. Yeah, I got to ask Joby about the other big game this week. Of course, I'm talking about the in-state rivalry between William and Mary and Virginia. Oh, no, I mean, how about Virginia and Gonzaga on Saturday?
As evidenced by the Louisville-Wisconsin game, thank goodness Virginia, after being off for COVID, has William and Mary at least, you know. And by the way, I would expect it to be closer than you expected because of the layoff. Virginia-Gonzaga, you know, we're going to see, you know, Gonzaga has taken on all comers flawlessly, whether it's Garza, whether, Gonzaga has met different styles, handled them all. All right, here's another type of style, Gonzaga. Let's see how you do. And if Virginia's hitting, they have a puncher's chance, you know, if they're hitting their threes. But right now, given what Virginia has done this year and what Gonzaga has done this year, I don't see how you couldn't take the Bulldogs on most, you know, in most occasions. But Virginia, because they had Villanova cancel, Michigan State cancel, they've had their marquee games go away. They now need this one. They now need this one to actually be on the schedule. And because they don't have a whole lot of opportunities out of conference, they have to fill them with teams like, you know, St. Francis that we just mentioned. Virginia needs to take advantage of this and at least look good, because so far that San Francisco game is actually sticking like a craw for a lot of folks. And then you followed up with an OT game against what is turning out to be a decent Kent State team, but still you should not be going to overtime against a MAC school.
Yeah, from a matchup standpoint, I'll just say that, like, Gonzaga has looked unstoppable on defense, Virginia, or on offense. Virginia, traditionally one of the best defensive programs in the country. You just love it when the unstoppable force meets the immovable object, and I think that's what we're going to have on Saturday.
I'm more disappointed, though, David, that we can't, that because of COVID, we can't dispatch Lee Delvecchio to the main Boston College game. That's all that I've got to say.
We're dispatching him.
We are sending him anyhow.
Yes.
With a face mask and full riot gear. And
everything. No, there won't be anybody there. He won't need a face mask.
Rocco, we mentioned...
The game's open to the public, but social distancing will not be an issue.
Let's stick with the Gonzaga team for a minute here, Rocco. We'll go over to the West Coast Conference and what they did to what we thought was a real good Iowa team on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, they put on a clinic, and... You know, the only surprising or mystery of that to me was that they were on a 16-day break with the COVID shutdown. Like, having to play Iowa right out of the gate after the shutdown, would they be effective? The other thing was it was a 9 a.m. Pacific time game. They didn't care about any of that. They were just clearly anxious to get back out there and whoop somebody's ass. And Iowa's defense is just perfect for that because they don't play any. They just torched them. I felt like, you know, especially watching that first half when they built like a 20-point lead pretty quickly, it felt like watching random guys play at LA Fitness and nobody's getting back on defense. That's what Iowa's defense was, just no help on the transition. Garza was unbelievable. I mean, he shot – I think he only missed like two shots the whole game. But just trying to watch him try to get back on defense was painful. Gonzaga exploited all that. Jalen Suggs, I mean, the guy is, he could probably be an NFL defensive back, and he's out there playing point guard. He's going to make a load of money in the NBA. It's just amazing that Gonzaga's turned into this where they get players like this. Cause they already have all the head smart guys. Plus now they got all these amazing athletes. So it's an incredible embarrassment of riches for the Zags. And, Iowa just ran into a buzzsaw.
Right. And David, this conference is looking deeper. Let's talk next about this BYU team, a very nice win at San Diego State on Friday.
They've been playing well all season. I think I saw them real early on in one of their first couple games and wasn't too impressed. But, man, I was with their win at San Diego State. And this was a San Diego State team that was a big truck going really fast down a hill. I mean, one of the best teams in the country. And for BYU to go in there and get that win, that is a big statement win. The polls still not very high, but I think that, like,
they got votes in both polls.
Yeah, they got votes in both polls. I think they're going to get into both polls. It might be later than sooner, but I mean, they're certainly trending that way. I think they end up there, but you got to like them. And I know that there's some other teams to get to.
I want to ask Ty Tell. We were talking about blowout wins. On Saturday, I had to go and double check. I thought that the scoreboard I was looking at had a wrong and some type of error with what St. Mary's did to Colorado State.
It looks like a typo, right? They gave up 33 points. They're 8-1. They won by 20. Only lost opening night to Memphis. Huge neutral site game on Tuesday against San Diego State from scenic San Luis Obispo, California. Great defense. Both inside, they allow only 42% inside the arc. And on the perimeter, they only allow 16 threes attempted a game. You can't just sit out there all night and drain threes. Point guard Tommy Cousy out of Mesa, Arizona, running the show. 15 points, 6 assists a game. I didn't think they were going to be a contender this year, and they're not going to beat Gonzaga. This team could be the second-best team in the West Coast Conference.
Well, Joby, let me ask you, do we have a shot at a three-bid West Coast Conference then with these three teams?
Right now, the J&G, you know, and those single digits in that 11 – right now, and it won't last, but four teams, including Santa Clara, because they're with the strength of schedule, 269.
Exactly.
But right now, you have four teams and three teams right now, if you ignore Santa Clara's undefeated record, that are in the field. BYU no doubt after beating San Diego State, because their losses aren't – yeah, they looked awful in one of those losses. But their losses are to good teams. St. Mary's, as Titel laid out the resume, this is a conference that has a shot at three, especially because of this. This is one component to keep in mind. And I might say – I was going to think about saving this for final thought, but this is so relevant right here. There are going to be so many ACC – Big 12, Big 10 teams whose records are going to be right at 500 or even below 500 just because of the depth of their conference. And they're playing 20 games in many of those cases, or 18 in the case of the Big 12. The fact of the matter is, when you can't rack up these bye game wins, does a 13-12 record get you in? I don't know, even in this COVID year, if it does. And so if you fart around and, you know, go 8-10 or, you know, a 9-11, you're going to miss it more likely this year than any other year, because you won't have the wins to have a reasonable overall record, while St. Mary's and Gonzaga's in, but St. Mary's and BYU are racking up win after win in the West Coast to wind up in their conference with a solid 13-5 record, 8 games over .500. Even if that's disappointing, it's 8 games over .500.
Rocco, is St. Mary's San Diego State, is that on for tomorrow, or is that off also?
Did you cancel that? 6 o'clock, CBS Sports Network, and San Luis Obispo, get your wine ready.
Oh, San Luis Obispo, at Cal Poly, or?
At Cal Poly, yep, halfway in between the two schools, just about. So it's going to be fun.
Okay, that's a big one on the schedule there. Gonzaga is playing Northwestern State as we speak, and playing them again tomorrow. Apparently,
it is Gonzaga. You just hate to see.
I guess they needed a couple bye games.
When are they going to finally play somebody?
Hey, Rocco, you had a couple of thoughts on BYU also before we move on to the next conference. Didn't want to cut you off on them.
Yeah, I mean, I featured BYU today. They were outstanding. You guys already mentioned the big win at San Diego State. I was just thoroughly impressed, because this BYU roster has transformed from last year. Last year, Child's tremendous scorer, but you had the outside threat of Toulson and Haas. All of that's gone now. Averett comes over from Utah Valley, great shooter. But the front line with Harms and Colby Lee and the others, the whole dynamic shifted to a front line, massive long team deep down low. They out-rebounded a San Diego State team that almost never gets out-rebounded, 40-26. So that triggered some fire alarms in my head that they could actually maybe, if they can use that length when they play Gonzaga, to cause some problems, especially when they're playing in the altitude of the Marriott Center. They might be able to knock off the Zags this year. Who knows? But it's a whole different look and a whole different strategy. And it obviously threw curveballs at the Aztecs.
And Rocco, I bet it will happen in the kennel because that's where it always happens.
That's true. They own them up in Spokane. That's true.
Let's jump over to the SEC now. And Tytel, the story in the SEC all season, I think, has been this Missouri team out of nowhere.
I'm kind of shocked as well. I agree. I mean, this team did not play last week. They got to savor their 3-point win over Illinois that was a week ago, improved to 5-0. They host Bradley Tuesday. Then they start conference play by hosting a very good Tennessee team on the 30th. They're doing damage down low, 61% inside the arc, but the starting backcourt is great. We talked earlier about Texas's backcourt. This one is right there. Mark Smith, True Smith, and Xavier Pinson, each of them scoring 14 to 15 points a game. Not bad. This team had a losing record last year, and they're contending for, I think, Joby, tell me if I'm wrong, I think this team is in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, that right now they are. I mean, hell, JNG has them third seed overall. Now, that's because they have the win, like the Illinois win. They've gone out, they've played a very good schedule. Look at, top 40 on just pure the numbers. And I would argue it's even better than that. And they have delivered an undefeated record on that. This is a team that right now looks the part of a 5-0 with very strong wins. I cannot – could they be a little counterfeit? They're going to have to change their personality to be counterfeit. I think looking at them, they're passing the old – you know, we're in the college football playoff era. They're passing the eye test, as they would say, very strongly. And given the SEC is not, in my opinion, that strong a conference, I think they have their marquee wins. They will not be one of those teams going 9-11 and worrying about a bid because your overall record's not good. They're going to be able to rack up a very nice record with good wins. Protected seed is a very realistic possibility.
Yeah. Whether you look at their profile or you just watch them play, there aren't very many teams in this conference, and maybe only one, that has looked better than they have.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one team, though, Rocco, I think I want to mention one team here, that they played three games in the past week against Appalachian State, Tennessee Tech, and a pretty lousy St. Joe's team. But the scores, Tennessee has absolutely obliterated their opponents this past week.
Yeah, definitely. I'm all in on the Vols from what I've seen. You know, they had the long shutdown, and you've seen almost all these teams. We're not talking about Vermont today, but we saw what happened to Vermont today in their first game. It's very difficult to just go from not being able to work out, not even be able to practice in a lot of these cases, and go play a tough team in your first game. And the fact that they grinded out a 9-point win over Colorado, who now since then has just been destroying everybody. We'll get to the Pac-12 later. But they also took care of Cincinnati right after that, and now they're just blitzkrieging, you know, all the last three opponents. They're getting it done defensively. St. Joe's tonight ended up creeping over 60, but that was the first team to score more than 56 points against them, and it was mainly because of garbage time. So, you know, I love defensive teams. Right now they're number three in defensive efficiency nationally. That's going to get you a long ways, I think, in the way today's college basketball goes, especially in the tournament. Rick Barnes has got a special team, I think.
Dave, we've got two other undefeated teams in this conference. Arkansas, who's played absolutely nobody so far. Yeah. But Georgia finally got a game in against a name, at least, in Cincinnati. And, maybe have we been laughing off Tom Crean's team too much?
I'm not laughing anymore after Saturday. I'm not ready to anoint them an NCAA tournament team, but they are no longer like a bakery special like that. I mean, Cincinnati had played well. Their profile isn't that good, but played Xavier really close, played Tennessee really tough, did not play Georgia tough at all. And Georgia just, they played good defense. They rebounded, they hit from the outside. Granted, Cincinnati's championship football game was going on, so maybe the basketball team was distracted by that. I don't know. But a really just impressive showing by Georgia on Saturday. And coincidentally, I think they will see each other again in the Peach Bowl.
Not really much. Besides the Kentucky-Louisville game we discussed already, not much to really look forward to this next week in the SEC.
Yes.
On basketball.
Can we pull up Kentucky real quick? It's, I think, one of the worst starts in the SEC. And
let me go ahead and pull up their whole team sheet here.
Yes. For you. Because I just kind of want to point something out here.
It's going to take a second to load, but go ahead, David.
Yeah, it's going to take a second to load. But anyway, struggling all year. They were kind of in the game, at least for the half against North Carolina. They've played a lot of good teams. But their season opener, I believe it was against, yes, Morehead State. I think that they just got exposed in that game, and everyone has just, like, watched the videos of that, and now they know how to beat it.
Okay.
Well, Chad, I will say on the schedule, you want to see how good this Tennessee team is. Look at the fact that Appalachian State, I think, will go into Auburn and at least play them very close. This is a team that Tennessee doubled up. I mean, yeah, you're going to see – I mean, that's how good the Vols are. After this week, you're going to say, wow, Appalachian State's okay. And then you go, oh, well, they lost. They got boat raced by Tennessee, the no man's land.
Chad, real quick, I just noticed this. An interesting game tomorrow, Abilene Christian at Arkansas, is worth tuning into.
Yeah, that is a – that Abilene Christian team actually did receive votes in the top 25 poll, the coaches poll this week for the second week in a row. Very good Abilene Christian team by Southland standards. Can they go and win in Arkansas? We'll find out tomorrow night. Just also that James Madison of Florida game obviously is off. But just want to give a shout out to Keontae Johnson, who is up, was talking to his team. He's coming along in his recovery. There's been no announcement yet what actually the problem was or was not, and we're not going to speculate on it. But it was really good to see him out there and posting videos on Twitter and the like. So really good because of such a scary incident we talked about last week. Let's jump over to the Pac-12, though. And Rocco, you mentioned the Colorado team, so let me go back to you about this Colorado team. They kind of took it to your Huskies last night. I know.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, it's a tough time in Husky land, that's for sure. But the Buffs, there is a lot of promise at the end of the road. I felt like I was about to make a Bill Walton comment there, but I backed off. Dallas Walton comes back from a tough injury last year. He looks phenomenal. He had 22 in just 17 minutes last night. This team's clicking well. You know, they played together a long time between Batty and Schwartz and Wright and Parquet and now Walton back in the fold. I thought they made a really good addition by getting Jeriah Horn, from Tulsa, part of a championship American Conference team at Tulsa last year. So they just got a lot of winning players. A lot of guys have been around college game a long time. It's a little bit different than most of the Pac-12 has. Maybe Stanford can compare a little bit, but playing extremely well. We saw this last year too. So I think what it's going to come down to for the Buffs is getting into the meat of the Pac-12 schedule, making those adjustments game in and game out. We saw them stumble last year down the stretch. So hopefully they've learned their lesson. I think it's a really fun team to watch, and it'd be good for the league if they make a run in the tournament.
Tytel, your Arizona team, tough game, a loss to Stanford. I know that you didn't like seeing that, though you had to have loved to see what you saw Wednesday night when Arizona State lost at home to UTEP. But I know you're trying to talk about a different team entirely. How about the Utes?
As much as I want to keep talking about Washington State as this ridiculous undefeated team, I am going to go a little south of there to talk about our good friends at Utah. 4-1, only loss at a good BYU team. They're off for most of this month, so they'll be well-rested before wrapping up 2020 when they go to UCLA on New Year's Eve. Great perimeter defense, only 26% allowed from behind the arc. A little young, they start three sophomores, but their top two players are experienced, junior Timmy Allen from Mesa, Arizona, and senior Alfonso Plummer, each of them scoring 15 a game. And I never thought of Coach Krestowiak as a great recruiter. If you look at this roster, it's not just guys around Mesa and Utah. We're talking Puerto Rico, Sweden, Finland, Jamaica, Senegal. Like, how do you convince guys to go to Utah?
Don't answer me. I can't answer that. Joby, how about Tytel's team, though? How about Arizona? Is this still a tournament team?
I think they scream bubble this year. I think Tytel would agree with that probably too.
But then what about the team that beat them then? What about Stanford?
They're on the bubble too. That's why it was such a good game. That was a tight game and Stanford pulled it out. And what
The Pac-12 is going to have this. They're going to they've had it for years, to be very honest. Teams right on, you know, fighting for that for a place in Dayton. You know, USC is going to once again see if they can get that trip again. Yeah, you know, Arizona, they're doing, I think, actually quite well given the obvious distractions around the program. And, you know, going into the game undefeated against Stanford, that Arizona has actually played pretty solidly to this point. And the Pac-12 season now will allow them to go forward. And as Tytel pointed out, and you point out too, Tytel, the fact the Sun Devils are stubbing their toe left and right and not looking good, you know, right now. I mean, that's the thing is, this is not just a case of, you know, to shift to from Tempe, you know, up more north in the state. I think Arizona State might just be in trouble the way they're playing, because if you hit your wrong foot in this particular season, you may not have a chance to get it back. And right now they are wrong footing everything.
I got to give a shout out to Northwestern State. It's playing Gonzaga back to back Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. They're at Washington State. So huge shout out to the Demons there.
You got to get games any way you can.
Well, 3 days in a row.
Washington State beat a tournament team. I think Purdue wins the swag.
Anyway.
David, UCLA, Oregon Wednesday night, assuming that game happens, that could be one of the top games in the season for the Pac-12.
Yeah, I think it will be too. And Santa Clara going to the Beavers, I know that that's not that much of a test, but it's probably better than a lot of the teams that have been playing.
Okay.
Colorado versus Grand Canyon, another fun one.
I've got a couple more conferences. I want to run through them a little bit quicker here. We're running a little long on the show, but over in the American Conference, Rocco, let me start with you. You want to talk a little bit about UCF again with that, picked up that huge win over Florida State that we mentioned already.
Yeah, the Knights, they had a real interesting philosophy coming into the season after, you know, tons of schedules got blown up left and right over the 2 months leading up to the season. They finally settled on just scheduling four powerhouses and nobody else. So one of those got scratched. That was the Oklahoma game, but they got Auburn in the first one, and Auburn was dealing with their own turmoil, so they got the win. Then they went up to Ann Arbor, got pounded, and then had a little bit of downtime leading up to this Florida State matchup, a lot of time to prep and learn. And just an amazing set of adjustments at half. I think they were down one at half, bunch of runs in that game. But UCF, Brandon Mahan came over from Texas A&M last year as a transfer, averaged about 7 a game, pretty good role player, just significant leap here yesterday, in fact, the Florida State game. I think it was Saturday night. He ended up with 32 points, 26 in the second half. Bona fide score, was flawless. They got two other contributors between Isaiah Adams and Darren Green, poured in 22 and 20 respectively. Between those three guys, they scored 74 of the team's 86 points. But everybody, you know, the team's only going 7 or 8 deep. Johnny Dawkins is making some chicken salad out of chicken something else. And they've got good talent. And now they've got a win that not a lot of teams are going to get in Tallahassee. So, you know, if they can get in the top 3 or 4 of the American, they'll stay in the conversation. This will be pretty interesting to follow.
Yeah, the Tytel. How about another team that only has one loss on the season? It was to a Memphis team that the score is not, that lost tonight actually to Tulsa. That score did not make the screen, but Memphis has an extra loss, Tulsa an extra win. But Tytel, what about Tulane?
Since Tulane is not going to remain in the conversation very long, okay, I figured I would get them in December before January comes. Only a 6-point home loss away from being undefeated. Defenses look great. They're allowing 60 points a game. The bad news, it's hard to get excited by the non-conference success. KenPom predicts they're going to go 0-19 the rest of the way in conference.
I love Ron Hunter as a coach. I think that they're noticeably better, although they're still nowhere close to good. But if anybody can get it going there, it's him.
It is, and he's got the built-in excuse. There is not a single senior on this roster. He's only had two guys start all 6 games. He's been shuffling lineups. So they're not going to make it this year. Next year, they should have some improvement.
At the end of the day, this conference joke, I think, comes down to two teams, and those are the two well, two of the three undefeated teams, if you want to count Temple as being undefeated, but Houston and SMU.
Yes, I agree. And, you know, SMU took care of business to start out for 1-0 in conference over East Carolina. Houston, we've talked the accolades. Just turn on the prior shows at Hoops HD. You know how much I love that defense and that just complete team that is the Houston Cougars. I actually think Houston has a very legitimate chance of going undefeated in this conference, sweeping SMU, who is – shown themselves to produce to date, but SMU is going to be fighting for a bit if they start losing, because the American just doesn't, and you've seen it by the overall records in many cases where your good-ish teams like Memphis and Cincinnati just can't, and Tulsa just can't put it together. You can't lose to them now. And so it's Houston and everybody else. But don't at the win March or April or May or wherever we get the darn tournament in, Houston will be highly seeded. A lot of casual fans go, Houston, they won't realize what they got. Houston will be legitimately a 2 or 3 seed at that point.
Real interesting week for Houston ahead. First of all, tomorrow night, if some of the games go, Battle of Undefeateds, Temple and Houston. Yes. 1-0. And then road trip to that UCF team on Saturday that we were just discussing. I think that could be one of the toughest challenges of the season.
That's a great game. Central Florida with their win showed something, because now Florida State shows they're a little bit in a funk, given it's not even the Gardner-Webb team that gave Virginia a scare in the, you know, in the 16-1 game. I mean, this Gardner-Webb team isn't really good for Gardner-Webb teams. So maybe it's Florida State hitting a funk, but until then, you got to think Central Florida is doing something right, as stated earlier.
David, we'll jump over to the Atlantic 10, where St. Louis picked up their first loss of the season on the road at Minnesota yesterday.
Yeah, and I know we talked about that a little bit earlier when we were talking about the Big Ten. I still really like this St. Louis team. I kind of like this Richmond team. Dayton is coming around. They're 4-1. The only loss to SMU, who we all think is really good, and had a nice win, although it was grinded out against Ole Miss. But, like, still not looking tournament good, at least not above the bubble-ish tournament good. But I'm still a believer in St. Louis and Richmond.
Yeah, I am as well. I mean, and St. Louis had the earlier win this week over NC State, so – They did pick up a scalp there, at least.
Another team. What about VCU? Not a lot of love for them.
They had a very good win over Western Carolina. Congratulations.
They did. And like, when you look at the state of North Carolina and you look at the western part of it, there just aren't that many teams as good as Western Carolina.
I think we should be talking about one of the two undefeated teams of this conference, and it's not the hasn't played yet Fordham Rams. It's the other one.
I mean, we forgot about the Bonnies because, in fairness, they hadn't played as of a week ago this entire season. They got underway last week. They didn't do cupcakes. They have a pair of nice single-digit wins, but Akron and Hofstra, solid mid-major teams to go 2-0. They host Buffalo Tuesday. They get a week off and then a very rough road trip at Rhode Island, at Richmond. We're going to see exactly what they're made of. Great perimeter defense. They're only allowing 24% from behind the arc. They start 5 juniors, so I think next year is when they make the leap. This year, I think they're just going to be okay. Great balanced scoring. Oshun, Oshunye, Kyle Lofton, Dominic Welch, each of them averaging over 16 a game. They only make 4 threes a game. It doesn't hurt them because they make and take a ton of twos.
Rock, you can correct me on this. I believe actually that Buffalo Bonnies game has been canceled for tomorrow night.
So Buffalo went on pause today, and they just traveled back from Syracuse. So Syracuse's game against Notre Dame is also postponed because Syracuse is in contact tracing, because they don't know they haven't figured out how long the virus has been with Buffalo. So unfortunate news, because those are two games we wanted to see this week.
The Hofstra-Richmond game, if that's a go for tomorrow night, that might be one of the better games. That is the best game left on this schedule, I guess, if you look at it that way.
And I'm still a believer, like Tytel, I'm still a believer in Richmond, despite the loss and the close game. Yeah, you say close game against Loyola Chicago. I think Loyola Chicago runs roughshod with Northern Iowa's problem. They run roughshod over the MVC. That's a good road win by Richmond. So I think Richmond's still – I think they're top 25 good.
Oh, they are.
I agree with you. And they did still make the coaches poll top 25.
Really, I mean, their only weak win is at Kentucky. You know, I mean, that's the only, cupcake they play.
One last conference to hit on. It is the Mountain West. We already discussed that San Diego State loss to BYU. But Tytel, let me start with you. And as we are recording this, New Mexico is down 13 points on the road at Boise State in a game. But do you want to talk a little bit about the Lobos?
Yes, just briefly, because I think they are going to lose this game at Boise. But, I mean, another team like the Bonnies, they didn't start until last week. Unlike the Bonnies, they did Cupcake City to start. Beat three weak teams by double digits to get to 3-0. They play Boise again on Wednesday, so this is certainly not a good sign. They don't have a home game until Nevada goes to Albuquerque on New Year's Eve. So it's to be understood, and if it gets that far, the committee will understand when you don't play for a whole month at home that there's reasons for losing. The good news, because they've been beating up on Cupcakes, they lead the nation in like every category. 55 shots inside the arc, 59 boards a game. They only allow 10 shots a game inside the arc, and they're getting it done with a big Australian senior, Makuak Maluak. He's been putting a lot of shrimps on the barbie, 18 points and 10 boards a game.
I mean, the committee doesn't seem to treat the SWAC too friendly, even though they often don't play at home until the end of December.
Rocco, Air Force, yes. Got a win on the road in conference play. Joe Scott, welcome back to Air Force.
First ever win in Reno for the Air Force basketball program in several tries. So congratulations. Now, in fairness, if you got two tries every year like you do this year, they probably would have had one. But no, that was just incredibly big upset. I mean, Nevada's got talent, good players, and they killed Air Force the first game. You know what? That just goes to show like what we're seeing in a lot of the smaller leagues. These back-to-backs create a whole different challenge, whole different psychological element that you normally you're not going to see in some of the power leagues. So it's fascinating. It creates the losing team much hungrier in the second game. It also seems to favor the road team more in the second game as well, because they get acclimated and nothing really surprises them in the second game. So just really interesting to see how this plays out across all these leagues.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we already mentioned this San Diego State, St. Mary's game, Joby, that's probably the only game worth watching in this conference this week. I would note that as we record this, also Utah State is up by about 50 points on San Jose State, and I mean literally 50 points.
San Jose State will not be replicating their football Cinderella story, is what you're saying.
They're going to win the Stallings.
I'll tell you what, on that note, let's go to final thoughts. But before I go ahead and pull the screen down, actually, Tytel, I'm going to start with you on the final thoughts here, and I'm going to pull something up for you here.
So we usually focus on the men, but Chad was kind enough to show Tara Vanderveer of Stanford, who is certainly worthy of a final thought this week. Last Tuesday, beat Pacific, the 1,099th win of her career, passes Pat Summitt to become the winningest coach in the history of D1 women's basketball. The resume is ridiculous. Two titles, 13 Final Fours, 23 Pac-12 regular season titles. They've only held 19 Pac-12 tournaments ever. She's won 13 of the 19. And to celebrate, she doesn't go out and buy a Ferrari. She doesn't go to Paris for a vacation. She's donating $10 for each of her wins to a Bay Area food bank. Good coach, good person. She better enjoy it, though, because Gino Auriemma goes for a career win 1096 tomorrow night at Villanova. So he might pass her next month.
Well, congratulations to Tara, first of all. Joby, let me jump over to you now for final thoughts as we pull the screen down here.
Yeah, no, and it goes to, I'll just reiterate what I said in the middle. That would be my final thought. Once again, watch these conferences who play, have big round robins among the Power Five conferences, because if you are one of those teams in the middle and you have not done your work out of conference, you are not getting a bid. They will not be giving, despite them giving bids to 2-20 South Carolina in the bowls. That's not happening for the NCAA in college basketball. You walk in with say, hey, look at my 13-14 overall record. You're not getting a bid. So you got to take care of business at a conference so that if you go 500 in a very tough conference like the Big Ten or the Big 12 or the ACC, you're not out of luck if you don't get those wins. In years past, 18-12 might get it. Not this year, because that 18-12 has turned into 12-12.
Well, Joby, I mean, I guess one thing here, though, is I think we're kind of with the Pac-12 and the SEC looking as lousy as they have, quite honestly, so far this season. We're down to four leagues that are going to be like that with significant numbers of bids, with the Big East adding into the three you mentioned. So, you know, that's is there room for one, for maybe a close to 13, 14 team, maybe if that's the case?
That's why we look at a conference like the West Coast Conference and say, three-bid league with the way St. Mary's is playing and BYU are playing. Yeah, you know, I think it's extremely realistic to look at bids at leagues like that, the Atlantic 10, the Central Florida, if they look really good in the American and finish five, six games above 500 there, all of a sudden with the win at Tallahassee, that gives them the right to get in over, let's say, a Florida State team who, let's say they lost tonight and finished, you know, and then go four games under 500 in the ACC. You know, ironic.
Rocco.
Yeah, so a couple quick hitters here. First of all, shout out to Dayton Basketball's Twitter account. I thought it was phenomenal. After they beat Ole Miss and they have already beat Mississippi State the week before, they declared themselves the Egg Bowl champions. I just thought that was awesome.
yes.
Next thing, candidate for early most annoying resume when we get to the end of the year, I will nominate the Marquette Golden Eagles, who have wins over Wisconsin and Creighton, but have now lost four games already, including Xavier, Seton Hall, two in conference, 1-2 in the league, and then UCLA and Oklahoma State at home. So that's heading down a very treacherous bubble scenario. And then just the last thought is, you know, looking ahead to that, as I always do, bracket season, we'll call it, the end of the year. It's just going to be really, really difficult, if it's not enough already, to take a bunch of these results and compare them. Like, you look at the Louisville game at Wisconsin over the week, Carlick Jones gets scratched right before tip-off. They're completely shorthanded, and Wisconsin blows them out before the game even gets started. But, you know, a few weeks from now, we might look at that and say, hey, Wisconsin beat Louisville at home, and, you know, Duke only beat them at home by one. So Wisconsin's clearly way better than Duke. You know, that's what we tend to do in college basketball. We start getting a bunch of data. We start comparing it. I think it's just going to be more important than ever to take a really big magnifying glass and look at what actually happened in all these games, because you're going to have so many programs that have started and stopped throughout the year. What was the situation? What was the lineup? Who was missing? All of that becomes even more important because there's less games to look at and so many more variables. So anyway, just a thought, because it's going to continue to be an emerging topic.
Yeah, and we're going to be discussing how much the eye test is or is not going to play into the actual committee this year. And, you know, and I think that they're going to be talking about it so that they can go ahead and do whatever the heck they want, quite honestly, and just say, eye test.
God, I hope not.
but on the other hand, I'll be just glad to see a field of 68 as well, no matter who's in it. But David, you want to finish us off?
Yeah, kind of staying on that same topic, it is going to be different. The resumes are going to look very different in a lot of cases than what we're used to. But, you know, I think the process will be enough the same to where they will be able to do it. Like, I start doing brackets a week into the season off of the merit rankings. The J&G is already out. Pretty soon, you and Rocco and Tytel are going to start doing brackets. And I think that when you do, you're going to be like, it's different, but it's not. Like, you're still looking at teams, evaluating teams, weighing the values of wins and losses, and picking the best ones. That process is going to be doable. I wasn't sure before the season if it would be, but I think it's going to be, albeit it will be different for all the reasons both of you just said. My second final thought is, this is our last show before Christmas. We're not going to do a hot take tonight. Honestly, I kind of forgot and didn't come up with one. But
good, because they were stupid anyhow.
Yeah, they were stupid anyhow. But anyway, that was kind of the point. But anyway, you know, I hope everyone has a safe and happy holidays. It's probably not the holiday that a lot of people want to have, still in the midst of COVID, but we will still be here. I'll be watching basketball Christmas Day.
Yes, so we have big – we don't have the Diamond Head, David, but we do have Big Ten basketball on Christmas Day. On behalf of Joby Fortson and Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org, John Tytel and David Griggs, for those of you that have already celebrated your holidays, belated happy holidays. For those of you that will be celebrating it this week, happy holidays again coming ahead. And we will be back on Wednesday night before the holidays with a Under the Radar podcast. And again, next week with one last show of 2020. And thank God this year is going to be over after that show. But I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. And we'll talk to you again real soon.